Welcome this morning to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my great privilege to serve this caring, justice-seeking congregation. It is so good to be with you this morning. I want you to know that every one of you is welcome here. Wherever you are in your house, whether you're in your pajamas or your clothes, whether you've had coffee or you haven't yet, whether you drink coffee or not, you are welcome here. No matter who you love or the color of your skin, you are welcome if your spirits are high and good or if you're really struggling and your spirits are low. You are welcome here, no matter how you find comfort and inspiration in your life. I welcome you with these words from Leslie Takahashi. Here in this place of peace, we find hope. Here in this place of connection, may we find life-giving community. Here in this place of rest, let the unrest of our hearts turn us toward justice. Here in the space made sacred by memories of connection, let us feel ourselves part of the new that grows from the old in the spiraling unity of years. If this is one of your very first times attending one of our services, and you would like to know more about the ways that we really connect as a community during this time when we are physically shut, please go to our website at woof.net and get in touch with our administrator, Pat Lykin, who can put you on our mailing list so that you can connect more deeply with our community. For everyone who got an email this morning, there is a link to Coffee Hour. And we would love to have you at Coffee Hour. I will be there this morning, and there's a lot in today's service to talk about as a community, so I would really love to see people there. This is our chalice lighting. And I will light our chalice first. Here we are. We light our chalice this morning for the conviction of our faith that in covenanted community we can transform so that all may experience everlasting and universal love. Please join me in saying our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
Woke up this morning, saw that smoke up in the sky. A crowd of people watching, asking who and how and why. Planes are rolling down the city, rolling for miles. How'd it get so bad, you ask? It's been burning for a while. Say it's in the eye of the beholder. Well, I'll just go and check. Now there ain't no chip up on my shoulder. That's your boot up on my neck. How these planes go so far, you ask? Now they've gone 1,000 miles. I got a news flash for you. They've been burning for a while. It's been burning for a while down here. Glad you stopped to see. It ain't no water gonna douse it down until you hear from me. You say it's in the eye of the beholder. Well, I'm just going to check. Now there ain't no chip up on my shoulder. That's your boot up on my neck. They say it's in the eye of the beholder. Well, I'm just going to check. Now there ain't no chip up on my shoulder. That's your boot up on my neck. Oh, it's been burning for a while. 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 It's been burning for a while down here. Glad you start to see. Ain't no water gonna douse it down until you hear from me.
This is from the New York Times, after the death of Dante Wright, written by Charles Blow, a black columnist. So it becomes hard to write about this in the newspaper because it is no longer new. The news of these killings is not that they are interruptions of the norm, but a manifestation of the norm. There is no new angle. There is no new hot take. There is very little new to be revealed. These killings are not continuing to happen due to a lack of exposure, but in spite of it. Our systems of law enforcement, criminal justice, and communal consciousness have adjusted themselves to a banal barbarism.
Hello, friends. It's so good to be with you today. Today, I share the story, The Day You Begin, by Jacqueline Woodson. And as we go through the story, I want you to keep these questions in your mind. So can you do that? Can you put your thinking caps on? And while I'm reading the story, keep these three questions in your mind. How do you see our Unitarian Universalist principles in this story? How do you find the bravery to be your different, unique, wonderful self? There's something different about you that makes you feel left out sometimes. Have you ever felt on the outside of a community? And if you have, what did you do about it and what made you feel better? Was there anything that made you feel better? I know that's more than three questions, but I'm hoping that if we put our thinking caps on nice and tight, we can think of all of these questions while I share this story. This is The Day You Begin from Jacqueline Woodson. There will be times when you walk into a room and no one there is quite like you. Maybe it will be your skin, your clothes, or the curl of your hair. There will be times when no one understands the way words curl from your mouth, the beautiful language of the country you left behind. My name is Rigoberto. We just moved here from Venezuela. And because they don't understand, the classroom will fill with laughter until the teacher quiets everyone. Rigoberto from Venezuela, your teacher says so soft and beautifully that your name and homeland sound like flowers blooming the first bright notes of a song. There will be times when the words don't come, your own voice once huge, now smaller, when the teacher asks, what did you do last summer? Tell the class your story. We went to France, Paula says. These shells come from a beach in Maine. A boy named Jonathan holds out a jar filled with tiny shells, so fragile they look like they'll turn to dust in your own untraveled hands. My whole family went to India, Spain, South Carolina. Each souvenir a small triumph of a journey, their travels going on and on. And as you stand in front of the room, you can only remember how the heat waved as it lifted off the curb, and your days spent at home caring for your little sister who made you laugh out loud and hugged you hard at nap time. You can only remember the books you kept on reading right long after she had fallen asleep. And in that room, where no one else is quite like you, you'll look down at your own empty hands and wonder, What good is this when other students are flying and sailing and going somewhere? There will be times when the lunch your mother packs for you is too strange or too unfamiliar for others to love as you do. When even your own friend Nadia will wrinkle her nose to say, "What's in there anyway?" And you'll wonder how she doesn't see the rice beneath the meat and kimchi. You'll wonder why she doesn't remember that rice is the most popular food in the world. There will be times when the climbing spars are too high, the run is too fast and too far, the game isn't one you can really ever play. I don't want him on our team. You can watch. Maybe you can have a turn later. There will be times when the world feels like a place that you're standing all the way outside of, and all that stands beside you is your own brave self, steady as steel and ready, even though you don't know what you're ready for. There will be times when you walk into a room and no one there is quite like you until the day you begin to share your stories. My name is Angelina, and I spent my whole summer with my little sister, you tell the class, your voice stronger than it was a minute ago, reading books and telling stories. Even though we were right on our block, it was like we got to go everywhere. Your name is like my sister's, Rigoberto says. Her name is Angelina, too. And all at once, in the room where no one else is quite like you, the world opens itself up a little wider to make some space for you. This is the day you begin to find the places inside your laughter and your lunches, your books, your travel, and your stories, where every new friend has something a little like you and something so fabulously not like you at all. The day you begin.
Hello. April is National Poetry Month. I'm Paul Soucy. Our poem for today is "The Negro Speaks of Rivers" by Langston Hughes. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo, and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
This is the time that we enter into prayer, reflection, or meditation, as is our own tradition. I begin with these words. With spirit of love and life, we are so grateful, so very grateful for all the gifts of life. For the sun that warms us, the earth that holds us, and the water and air that flow through everything, connecting us to each other. Thank you for food that nourishes and friends who comfort and laugh. Thank you for all the ways the web of life binds us together, making us whole. Forgive us when we forget these blessings and complain of smaller irritations. Remind us always to turn our faces toward what gives life so we may become more open, more loving, and full of joy. Dear spirit of love and life, we feel helpless before the violence. White young men killing in rage and pain. Police bullets killing unarmed black men. He was only 20. He was only 13. the most recent in piles of bodies that our tax dollars killed. And we feel so helpless. Politicians say we will fix the gun problem or the mental illness problem for a week or so until they talk about something else. People rise up wailing in grief for loved ones, angry, afraid, destroyed that these police murders have happened yet again. And there are no signs of them stopping. And leaders say, we grieve with you. We are sorry it happened. There will be a review. But please don't destroy the property. There is no reason for that. Oh, and in case you might, we're sending out armies of people who look just like the person who killed your son to stare you down. So here we are, once again, helpless before the violence, fear, and anger, and death. And we are frozen in a system that cycles over and over, helpless. Oh, Spirit of love and life, give us breath, give us life, give us a way through. Give us work for our minds and for our hands. Give us attraction on a path. Give us courage. Help us bind up wounds. Help us ask for a peace where all may live and all may flourish. Help us. Amen.
I'm Jane, and I'll be playing Frank for the movie Guanabi. Thank you.
Member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote journeying toward spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions.
Week, we are all stunned by yet another mass shooting. The front page counts of two more killings of unarmed black men, while we watch the end of a murder trial for another. This is the country we live in. We can't be in denial or even act surprised. This is just the truth of it. It feels right now that the vision of beloved community, the one that the Dr. King Center describes as a time where poverty, hunger, and homelessness will not be tolerated because international standards of human decency will not allow it. Racism and all forms of discrimination, bigotry, and prejudice will be replaced by an all-inclusive spirit of sisterhood and brotherhood. It seems in this time that that beloved community could not be further away. Amidst this ongoing backdrop of pain that is our society, Unitarian Universalist congregations across the country are steadily discussing and adopting the eighth principle that centers beloved community and dismantling racism. I leave it to you again. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote journeying toward spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and in our institutions. Unitarian Universalism is a living tradition. We state that boldly on our hymnals. In theological language, we might say we do not believe that revelation is sealed, but always open. We will realize new understandings that bring us closer to loving fully, and when we do, we will change. Unitarians came to our country as the Puritans. 400 years later, they would never recognize us as their descendants. They would be horrified, and many of us shudder to claim them as our ancestors. But it was the way that they structured their churches around covenants that required that generations of congregations grow together in their understanding of love and God that has made possible for us to be the faith that we are today. All that changing can be disorienting. Every once in a while throughout our history, someone will ask, but who are we now? What do we hold in common? And over the centuries, we've diligently tried to answer that question in the moment. And this includes James Freeman Clark's statement of our theology, which was in favor for a number of years at the end of the 19th century and into the earliest 20th century. Unitarians claimed the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, the leadership of Jesus, salvation by character, and the progress of mankind onward and upward forever. Our seven principles are the latest attempt to say what we have in common as a faith and who we are now. These particular principles and sources, as they are known, were written in 1985 as a revision of the six principles written when the Unitarians and Universalists merged in 1961. The two sets are similar, but not at all the same. It was Unitarian Universalist women, motivated by the women's movement, new ideas of inclusive language, and new attention to Earth Center faith that drove the changes in that last statement of who we are as a faith. My daughter goes to school in Albany, Oregon. A few weeks ago, when the first and second graders joyfully got out of their cars and off school buses for the first time in a year, they were greeted by firemen and police officers giving high fives and stickers. Firemen greeting kids on the first day of school is an old tradition in Albany. In this special year, they asked the police officers to join them. And maybe this was fun for some of the children, but it wasn't for all of them. Black and brown children reported feeling confused and afraid. And so were their parents. Some parents spoke up. They spoke to the superintendent and the chief police and others. Several days later, the superintendent wrote to the full community in response to social media rumors. This is what she said in part of her letter. As a result, we are making only one, but an important substantive change. We are now actively listening to all those experiences and perspectives and considering them in decision-making for this future event. In 1985, Unitarian Universalists, living in covenant, willing to change, listened actively to the louder women voices in our movement. In 2021, we are listening more actively to people of color in our movement. This change makes it possible to open our doors and hearts wider and to truly become that beloved community that we dream of. Unless we truly listen to the experience of people on the margins of our faith, we are unable to truly welcome everyone who finds our religious message freeing and love-giving. Of course, This listening also asks us once again to reconsider that ongoing question we ask ourselves. Who are we now? For Unitarian Universalists, centering and really listening to the experiences of UUs of color has been a rocky journey. Most of our history, we have had few people of color in our pews. And we actively worked against having UU ministers of color well into the mid-20th century. But then, in 1969, at a Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, known as GA, where UUs from across the United States and at that time Canada got together to govern our association, a third of the people who attended were Black. We were a progressive state that had shown up for the civil rights movement. We drew thousands of liberally religious and humanist Black people. But during a crisis at that GA, now called the Empowerment Controversy, the majority of those people walked out, and most of them never returned to our faith. 30 years later, in 1997, we passed a resolution at GA to become an anti-racist, anti-oppression, multicultural organization. We funded anti-racism programs and education, but after a few years, the funding waned and attention fell elsewhere. Then in the spring of 2017, 20 years after we passed that resolution to become more multicultural, when Unitarian Universalism was still one of the whitest denominations in our entire country, the UUA made a hiring decision, hiring pretty typically a white male minister for a leadership position. This decision detonated decades of pain experienced by people of color, particularly professionals and ministers of color within our faith. This pain included being passed over time and time again for leadership positions as white male ministers hired their friends using informal hiring practices, but also included routine practices of UU congregations not supporting ministers and other professionals of color as they dealt with racism and oppressive practices of white culture within our congregations. The fallout was enormous, and some of you might remember it. The UUA president, a Latino, resigned after calling the concerns of UUs of color and their allies hysterical. Other UUA leaders resigned. The social media war between people with all sorts of perspectives and experiences was brutal. Long-term relationships ended. The association floundered. And somewhere in all that whirling chaos, a decision was made. People realized that what we'd been doing to counter racism and oppression within Unitarian Universalism wasn't working. We had to do something different. We had to really, actually start listening to UUs of color and hearing their experiences. We needed to put their voices at the center of the conversation about who we are as a faith. The UUA board hired 3 Black UU leaders to serve in a shared presidency for a few months until the end of the president's term. The board also appointed a commission on institutional change to find out what happened with that hiring decision and make broad recommendations for transferring the culture of the UUA in our congregations. so we could really become the beloved community we yearn to be. That year's June Set General Assembly was quickly reworked so that UU's in-person could process that extremely difficult spring. There, Paula Cole Jones, a Black UUA regional staff member responsible for racial and social justice, and former president of DRUM, Diverse and Revolutionary Unitarian Universalist Ministries, introduced her four-year-old project to forward a new principle, one that focused specifically on the creation of beloved community. Many UUs wanted beloved community as part of their congregations, but after 15 years of working with these congregations, Jones had realized people could believe that they were a good UU and follow the seven principles without dealing with racism and other oppressions at a systemic level. And this made the goal of beloved community impossible. So she collaborated with Bruce Pollock Johnson, a white anti-race ally, and they wrote the eighth principle. The same spring that the UUA was imploding from the hiring decision, Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism, BLUE, endorsed the new principle. As Black Unitarian Universalists, they wrote, we acknowledge that while some see our faith as the big tent where everyone is welcome, UUs cannot uphold precepts or practices that undermine the worth and dignity of people of color at our common altars. BLUE has asked UU congregations to adopt this principle, and many have. Many UUs want to create beloved community as our highest aspiration as of what is possible in human communities. We have learned how to listen to voices of those who've been silenced and marginalized. And we are now listening. Again, here is the eighth principle. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote journeying toward spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. So what does this mean, actually? And what would this principle ask of us? This principle is not like the others. Most of the others are statements of values. We affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, for example. That is one of our foundational values. Only two others ask anything specific of us. In principle three, we are asked to accept and encourage one another. In principle seven, we are asked to respect. This one, however, asks us to do something more concrete. It asks us to build. It asks us to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community. And we are asked to do it in a specific way, by our actions, accountably dismantling racism and other oppressions. This principle is not a value we affirm and hope to promote, such as principle six, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, which is lovely and a good thing to pray for and advocate for whenever you can, but not something we hold ourselves accountable for achieving. This one does ask us to take action and to hold ourselves accountable for achieving it. chaos, the principal argues, is spiritual wholeness and multicultural beloved community. For me, spiritual wholeness means that we are truly open and connected to the interconnected web of both natural and human existence. That's what's sacred. That's where the divine rests, if those are words that you use. Beloved community means all people are truly seen and valued and are allowed to flourish. This is what I want. This is what I want for myself. This is what I want for you. This is what I want for people of the world. And it makes sense to me that in a faith tradition that wants these goals, which I think many of us do, we might need principles that ask more of us than simple affirmation. I think the concept of accountability is profound here. It reminds us that we are a relational faith and that we believe understanding of what love asks of us happens within honest, mutual, caring relationships. Love grows if we are accountable to each other across difference. This is especially true when we center voices that have been silenced historically or have been so marginalized that no one heard them at all. This is how we change. This is how we learn. And this is how we grow love. So what does accountability even mean in this context? It means that when I am in relationship with someone in a congregation and I hurt them or I don't notice the way a system or a practice in our congregation shuts them out or shuts them down, I am committed to learning about it. Maybe I'm told. Maybe I'm shouted at. Maybe I get a letter, or I read an article, or I attend a lecture. I learn about an entirely different perception or lived experience. I discover how what I didn't know gets in the way of other people being welcome in my faith, which I consider to be love and life-giving. In those moments, I feel awkward, uncomfortable, guilty, stupid, anxious. I mean, who wants to be wrong after all? It feels terrible. However, since relationship matters, because I care, because I covenant to be accountable for my actions, I take the steps of accountability. I apologize for the harm done, for the system, the way it's been set up. I do what I can do to mediate the harm, to fix it or reduce it. And then I commit to changing so the harm does not happen again. I change myself or I change the system. These are the changes that we make that repair webs of mutuality and make communities and the world different. Is this easy? Not at all. Our congregations that commit to building diverse, multiracial community, ones that feel like coming home to people just like you, probably not. But the promise is so much larger than easy comfort and getting along. It is about answering a yearning for real beloved community where everyone is not just like us, even though we bleed the same and feel the same sadness and the same joy. It is answering the yearning for spiritual wholeness, where all it has kept us safe and distant from the vibrating web of existence, falls away. And we get to experience love greater and more encompassing than anything that we had imagined. I believe Wolf should consider adopting the Eighth Principle, and I would like us to be in conversation about this. I would like us to understand what it might mean for our congregation. So I believe that adopting the Eighth Principle will end the tragedies for Black people experienced last week and all the weeks before for 400 years. I believe it commits us in a new way to being part of the answer. It changes us in ways we cannot see from this vantage point, from where we stand now, where all looks helpless before us. And what is possible then from the new vantage points? I don't know. But I do know, I do believe with all my heart and with the experience of my faith, that it moves us towards peace, and it moves us towards love. May it be so.
When I wake up in America, I see my neighbors there, with every type of clothes and shoes, hats and skin and hair, every fine belief and custom, chords of songs from who knows where. When I wake up in America,
benediction is from Maya Angelou. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. But if faced with courage, may not be lived again. Lift up your eyes open, the day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. We extinguish the chalice, knowing the flame of Unitarian Universalism is alive in the world and in our hearts and spirits, and so shall continue to offer light ever.